Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson. In the last 2 weeks, we've taken a look at what happened in the recently concluded legislative session in Iowa. We've heard from members of both parties, and now we're going to turn our attention to what happened on the other side of the river. In Springfield. And to help me do that today is State Representative Dan Swanson, who's a Republican who represents a very interesting district that starts in Rock Island County and goes vertically all the way down to McDonough County. Dan brings a very interesting background to the state legislature. He's a sixth generation family farmer. He's also a veteran. He served in the Iraq War, retired lieutenant colonel in the Illinois Army National Guard, awarded a Bronze Star and a Combat Action badge. So he also served on the school board locally. He's from Woodhull, and I'm very pleased to have Dan as my guest today. Thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you, Robin. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I want to send a big shout out to you, Robin, as an advocate for your students, bringing them to Springfield, letting them understand and see what takes place in Springfield. I always enjoy talking with the students, as you well know, and it's always interesting, some of the questions I get from the students, but it's also very warming to know that they're there to learn and to see what goes on in Springfield, because sometimes us legislators have been there a while don't quite understand everything that takes place, but it's good to be able to share that with the students, so I thank you for that.
Well, I thank you. As listeners know, I teach part-time at Monmouth College and I in political science, and I like to take my students to Springfield. And Dan Swanson's always been more than willing to make time for my students, whether in Springfield or even he spoke to some of my classes, which I think is very important. So that's very much appreciated. And it's part of the job, I think, to explain what goes on and what doesn't go on and sometimes.
And I enjoy, as you well know, last couple of years, I've always invited the colleges within my district down for inauguration. And I remind people, I live in the most educated district in Illinois with Black Hawk College, Sandberg College, Knox College, Monmouth College, WIU, and Spoon River College. So that's an important part of our district here is the higher education, along with all of our elementary, secondary education. But you know, here we are in Western Illinois, and education is important to all of us.
Yes, and that's a great point that I want to get to in a minute. What impact the legislature's actions will have on education? But first, I just want to kind of open it up for you to kind of give your impressions on what happened in the legislative session. Maybe some things that you were happy with, maybe actions that you weren't, and just kind of your big picture, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, as all spring legislative sessions, they conclude passing a budget. And this year, the budget was $55.2 billion. When Governor Pritzker took office, it was a $40 billion budget. Now we're north of $55 billion. So a lot of increases in there. And with that budget, there's several new taxes. And when we look at those new taxes, we kind of put them in two different categories. We put them in a recurring tax, such as the tax on gambling, the tax on cigarettes or nicotine, where those are recurring every year, those taxes will be there. So it's a solid financial flow. And we'll talk about those a little bit later on. But the ones that are the more difficult ones are what we call the one-time fees that come into the state for the general revenue fund. An example of that is the governor has implemented an income tax grace period, where if you have penalties or fees or even haven't paid your income tax over the years, you're given the opportunity to pay those now without having to pay a fee. And they estimate that's going to bring in about $228 million. So that's going to be a one-time shot in the arm, where, you know, when you build your budget off of some one-time incomes, once you use it, it's gone. So to even build a budget off of tax increases and the one-time costs is doesn't make for a very solid budget, in our opinion, or my opinion. But it does get the governor to a point where he can say it's a balanced budget. But it's balanced on the back of working class, balanced on the back of those people who have not paid their taxes. So that's kind of concerning.
Yeah, for our listeners, it would be like in your household budgets, going out and maybe getting a one-time influx of money into your checking account and then building that into your monthly budget every month. Is that kind of similar to that? I mean, most households that I know would not do that. But
No, because once you live at that new standard, that higher standard is now the standard. You know, we can't go back now that we can afford those three extra streaming TV shows because we did get an influx of money. Well, when it comes time 1 year from now to pay those extra streaming video TV shows, we can't do it because that money is no longer there. So what do to make up that difference? In the state, we just raise taxes or do other things. So it's tough. And you know, I said on the backs of the working class people, and we look at who likes to play the gaming books? Who likes to bet on sports? Who likes to do those and the horse race and all that? It's most likely guys, the blue collar people who do that, the working class people who do that. Now, I don't mean to stereotype anyone, but I'm just saying that's normally the people who enjoy those types of activities, is that working person who gets home from work or on a weekend gets together with some buddy and say, hey, let's watch the races, or let's bet on the football game this weekend or the basketball game. So that is, it's tough for them. And then, you know, we can nicotine, you know, we can go down that street too, where nicotine products, those who enjoy their moist, their snuff, their synthetic nicotine products, all those different tobacco products, they're going to have to pay more. They're going to have to pay more. And about $78.8 million of what that's going to generate. And then the gaming is going to generate a $171 million of GRF. And, you know, that is a big jump. And I know there's some of the other taxes that were talked about did not go through, the $1.50 tax on pizza, we called it, that delivery tax, that extra $1.50 you would have to pay for UPS or some other service to deliver to your house, that we were able to beat down. It did not pass. So that was one of those successes, if you can. But in some of the other tax increases, the governor really isn't a tax increase, but the governor, every year, they're supposed to shift the state sales tax. And this was going to be the final payment on the, so when you buy gas, you pay both a gas tax and that state sales tax. The final shift of $171 million was supposed to go towards the road fund, but the governor elected to keep that and use it in GRF to help balance the budget. We talked about the sports.
How much was that was diverted that didn't go to the road fund that was supposed to?
$171
million. That's we could use that out here, couldn't we?
We could. I know of a couple bypasses that would be nice to put that $171 million toward.
Yeah.
So another one that was not funded, you know, we hear about the rainy day fund. I think we're up to 2 days on our rainy day fund. And most auditors, I believe, are 60 to 90 days is what they like to see. Well, there's $3.5 million that will not be going per month to that rainy tax fund. That $45 million is going to the budget. So a lot of trickery done.
That better be a pretty quick rainstorm. So that's exactly. All we got in the rainy day fund.
Right. A cloudburst in time.
I got a question. I guess I followed this and I got several questions, but was any effort made to cut the budget in any areas before they went to tax increases? I mean, I read where, and you can correct me, Dan, the budget went up $2 billion and taxes went up a billion. Is that right? Yes. So they're spending more. Was any effort made to look for fat like the DOGE at the federal level?
We as Republicans certainly did, but we're never a part of that budget process. Mm-hmm. One thing they'll say as a success, several members across the aisle, was there was $330 million removed out of the Medicaid fund for the immigrants, the undocumented immigrants that were receiving Medicaid benefits from age 34 to 64 or 40, that age group of people will no longer receive Medicaid. 65 and above will, which costs about $110 million. But that $330 million, not a real cost savings when your budget goes up. It was just shifted somewhere else. Higher education committee sat in a room, both sides of the aisle, and went through the total budget for higher education and made recommendations where it appeared like there could be some redundancies that could be reduced. Schools were using funds that had been, those funds had ended last year, was the end of that period. So those funds were lined out. But after doing a 4-hour review of all that, none of that went forward. So we kind of get caught in traps of sit down and be a partner with us and help look at ways to save money. But when the rubber meets the pavement, we're not in those locked door sessions.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is State Representative Dan Swanson from Illinois' 71st District, which starts up in Rock Island County, right in our neck of the woods, and goes all the way down, very vertical district if you look at it, down to McDonough County, includes Macomb. Quite a few institutions of higher education, community colleges, universities in this district. Dan and I have been talking a little bit about the budget that just passed and concluded legislative session. I got several other things I want to touch on here, but
sure.
And I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to ask. I read, is it true that they bring the budget out and it's this big, thick document and they put it on your desk a day before the deadline it's supposed to pass? Is that true?
That's absolutely true. I think this year the budget was 3,348 pages long. And that was with Amendment 1. When Amendment 2 came out, it increased another 500 and some pages. And, we all go through it as best as we can. We have staffs that focus on their specific particular area in the budget. Might be higher education, agriculture, medical, the different categories, transportation, and those groups. They're there all night long and go through that as we read it in our hotel rooms, thumbing through using our computers with Word Find and Word Search, looking for keywords for our district, typing in a city name or typing in a school name, where they're going through that document all night long and put together about a 200-page synopsis of that bill. But yes, they drop it the day before. So everyone understands the budget deadline is 31 May. There was a time when they would actually stop the clock if they didn't get the budget passed by midnight, the 31st of May. This year, there's three parts to the budget. There's a budget, the spending bill, which we refer to as a budget. There's a BIMP, which is a budget implementation plan. That tells how every dollar is going to be spent or transferred into different state agencies or whatever groups it may be. And then the third part's the revenue. It's the revenue bills where we see the tax increases and all the different revenue items coming through. But those three budgets have to be passed by midnight. And they have to be passed because the threshold for passing is 60 votes before midnight on the 31st of May. After midnight, now we go to 3/5 vote, and now it requires 71 votes to pass. And you may recall last year, we went through three iterations of voting just to pass the budget because members weren't there and they were getting nervous. So this year, the budget, I believe it was about 1050 that we first got the budget. We were given 10 speakers on the budget.
Remember 1050, 1050 the night before?
That on May 31st. So the budget was the day before, but amendments come way afterwards.
Okay.
And amendment two dropped. Well, the budget came before us at 10:50. It probably dropped at 9:15, something like that. Maybe an hour and a half before. But that second amendment, like I said, was 500 some more pages too.
So you get the budget document, the first one, the date May 30th, correct?
Yes.
And it's due to be passed May 31 at midnight. I just want to clarify that for our listeners. You got your first look at it about a day before it was due to be passed, a document that ends up being 4,000 plus pages.
Right. Okay. And it has been discussed several times in the Democrats' caucuses, so they all know what's in there. What it means to their districts. And we're given less than 24 hours to try and understand what's in it for us in our districts and our communities. So then we have the debate. We were going to have 10 people debate on it. We were actually cut down to 5 or 6 members that could debate on it because now we're approaching the 11 o'clock hour and we speak and we have to vote. And there were actually 3 majority members who voted against the budget this time. And then the next thing is the BIMP. The BIMP, we were given 3 members to talk on it because we only had about a half hour to pass it because we're approaching now 11:30. And so we voted on that. And then we've got a half hour to vote on the revenue package. And I think the debate started on that with Ryan's, with Leader Spain. At 11:52, he was the only speaker. He was given 3 or 4 minutes to speak, and then we had it voted on by midnight. Because of the issues we went through last year with, and I could go into all the details on that, but it came down to where it was some manipulation and changing the rules just to get the budget passed. This year, I wouldn't call them security, but there were staff members standing outside the doors of the floor to make sure no Democrat members left, that they wanted all those votes present, because it's quite an embarrassment last year.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask, just so listeners have an idea what happens. I would hope, regardless of your party, I know there's strong partisans out there on both sides that listen, but regardless of your party, this is not a way to work to pass a budget, in my opinion anyway. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I want to get in our remaining time here. Did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add too that
when
you look at these bills, they don't say budget, they don't say BIMP, they don't say revenue, because they're what's referred to as a shell bill.
Shell bill, yep.
That have a different, that confuses our listeners and our members too, because it may be a bill that you think is about electronic equipment. Well, it turns out it's a budget bill or revenue bill. So that's deceiving too.
Give me an overview, if you would, please, on education funding, both K through 12 and higher ed.
Well, on the K through 12 side, there was always that promise to use the equitable funding model to pay for that. This year, we've had, in the past years, we've made our $350 million contribution to elementary secondary education. This year, there was not the full $350 million committed to that agreement. There was $43 million pulled out of that $350 million that was going to be going towards helping with property tax grant release. And that was pulled out of that. So now there, there was no property tax grant money available. On the higher education side, for the last couple of years, well, let's back up. On the higher education, I serve on appropriations higher education, which means all the universities come to us with their asks for funding. Many schools came in asking for 12%, some 20-some percent funding. And in this year's budget, there was a budget for the governor in his state of the state had addressed a 3%. When this budget came out, Amendment 1 was a 1% increase for higher education. Amendment 2 included a 3%, but the caveat of the governor was that final 2% is only if it's available. Will you get your full 3%? So it really put our schools in a tough position. For the last 18 months, 2 years, I've been on the task force looking at an equitable funding model for higher education. And that equitable funding model called for dividing $135 million across the universities per year. And at the end of 10 years, then about $1.5 billion in increases. That funding model was going to be based upon many different factors of the school's structure, the number of students, and then also the faculty and resources available for those categories. But that equitable funding model fell short. It did not get passed this year. It has some good points and it has some points that aren't quite what I liked. The biggest issue was how do we fund? We can't look at all students being equal because we have those who are going to med school. That takes a lot more money. We have schools in Chicago. We have schools downstate. There's some of that demographic side of it. And so that ought to be taken into consideration. Some of the research the universities do. University of Illinois does more research than maybe a Western Illinois university. So there's more funding to help for those research projects. So there's a lot more work to do on that. Possibly next year we'll be able to bring it up for vote. But it's one of those bills that here we are on May 31st coming down to the last hour or two of the day, and it did not cross the goal line. Another higher education bill that drew a lot of attention, the governor addressed it in his State of the State address, was the four-year baccalaureate degree programs, allowing junior colleges to offer a four-year baccalaureate program. It's high on the list. The governor wants to push it. Our own Senator Halpin was the one who was selected by the Senate to carry it. And what this bill would do, it would allow colleges, our junior colleges, to offer that four-year baccalaureate degree program, but several stipulations. One of the stipulations is that junior college would have to design their program, pitch their program to the Illinois Community College Board, where it'd have to pass, and then it would go to the Illinois Board of Higher Education, where it too would have to pass. The stipulations up front would be that the four-year college would not provide, it would not be any competition with that four-year school. And when we talk about our four-year schools, out in other than Cook County and neighboring counties, out here it was a 40-mile radius. You could not compete with a college within a 40-mile radius of your junior college. In Chicago, it was a 20-mile radius design. So that bill did not, a lot of discussion on it, but it did not make it to committees and did not get called for a vote.
News last week was that former House Speaker Mike Madigan was sentenced to, I believe, 70 months was it, in jail for corruption. And I just saw over the weekend where a sitting state senator, and correct me if I'm wrong, is going to be retried on corruption. Has there been any efforts to clean up Illinois politics? We've got such a bad reputation. And again, I think that's a fair statement regardless of your party. Anything more that needs to be done to clean this up, Representative?
We've had several pieces of legislation never get called on cleaning up the politics here in Illinois. And when the governor talks about corruption here in Illinois, he talks about, well, look at Speaker Madigan. The system worked. And it did work in respect that, yes, there was a federal trial. Yes, there was, he was convicted. And yes, he is going to spend time in jail. But that doesn't get after some of the other ethics violations that occur. I mean, we've got Emil Jones, his trial, feds are going to charge him again and go back through the system, go through the process once again. Since I've been in the House, we've had a couple legislators arrested. But yeah, there's fixes to this. And like I said, we've had fixes in place. Why should you walk out of a position as state representative today only to turn around to be a lobbyist tomorrow? There needs to be time limits in there.
I got time for one more question, and it's going to have to be short, and I apologize for that in advance because it's an important issue. But share the story of how you, as a Republican, and as our listeners know, the Democrats have a big, huge majority in the House, but you were named chairman of a committee, and I know it's something very special to you. If you could, in a minute, summarize that process for us. What happened?
So on a Sunday afternoon, my phone rang, and I answer my phone all the time, but this was an odd number, so I didn't answer it. I listened to the message. It was Representative Swanson, this is Speaker Welch. Can you call me back? So I'm down in my basement and my watching TV, and I go upstairs, sit down at the kitchen table, get all my papers out, thinking, oh my gosh, the superintendent's called me or the general's called me. What the heck's going on? So I sat in my chair, got everything. I called him back and he said, hey, Representative Swanson, this is Speaker Welch. Tell me a little bit of, I admire your dedication and work for our veterans and Lyme disease. Tell me a little bit more about your military service. So I covered my military service with him. He said, hey, thank you. He says, I'd like to offer you the speaker or the chairman of the Veterans Committee. And I got goosebumps. I mean, to be offered that position was just overwhelming. I'm so grateful for the speaker. And he actually said members of his caucus had said, well, let's ask Swanson to be that. So I've got the support of not only him, but members of the majority party. And it's overwhelming. The staffs have been great to work with. I work with my House Republican staff. I worked with the House Democrat staffs, and it's all great young people doing a great, wonderful job. So overwhelmed. My first committee meeting, I had a subject matter hearing where I brought in the commanders of the VFW, the American Legion, different veterans organizations, including the U.S. Department, or the Illinois Department of VA, brought in Congressman Boss, Senator Duckworth's staff, and we had a meeting about how do we help veterans in Illinois.
I'm really grateful we had this opportunity. A couple other times we tried to get Dan on. It didn't work out on scheduling, but we'll have you back. Dan Swanson, state representative from the 71st District, which includes part of Rock Island County, has been our guest today. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Robin. Always a pleasure, and have a great summer.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.